insulation. Okay, good morning, everyone. We're beginning Parshas Toldos. And we're going to go over what's troubling many people in this whole Parsha, the whole idea of Yitzchak's love for Esav, his desire to give Esav blessings, and the requirement for Yaakov to act in stealth and to steal the blessings away from Esav, which is the discussion of a lot of difficulties over here. The portrayal of Yitzchak as seemingly a foolish father who falls into the hands of a scheming Esav, and Yaakov, who has to resort to all kinds of dishonest measures in order to get the blessings. I'm assuming we all know the basic story, and I'm not going to review the basic story. So let's begin with a few important sources over here. We're going to read a little bit inside for the first few minutes and see a little bit of the text, what's going on, and ask a number of questions, and then analyze what's happening here. Okay, so Yitzchak and Rivka are married for 20 years. They don't have any children. They finally pray very strongly, and they beg Hashem for children. Hashem blesses her that she becomes pregnant. And the Torah tells us in the first source, Vayisrotzetzu habanim bekirbah, and the children struggled inside of her when she was pregnant. And she says, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire from Hashem. So what was exactly going on over there? So the rabbis explained that every time she passed by, when she was pregnant, she passed by the doors of the study hall of the yeshiva of Shem and Aver, she felt movement, the child wanting to run out and go out. When she went by the doors of a house of idol worship, she also felt this desire for the child to go out. So she thought the child was one child, and she thought she was giving birth to a schizophrenic. One guy, he likes going to shul and to daven, and he also likes to worship idols. And she's saying, what's going on over here? To which she was told, no, you're going to have two children. You're going to have two children, and they're going to have two different lives. And so it was. And so they were born, and we know the Torah then says that Esav was a man of the field. He was an Ish Tzayit, a hunter. And Yaakov was an Ish Tam, was a simple man dwelling in the tents and learning Torah. And over there, the Torah tells us in the third source that Yitzchak loved Esav because he ate of his venison, but Rivka loved Yaakov. So again, how does this sound? It sounds that why did Yitzchak love Esav? Because of the venison he gave him. You know, he was a good trapper. He gave him food. He gave him some benefits. It seems that Yitzchak had this love for Esav because he benefited more from Esav than from Yaakov, which would seem very difficult to understand. Is this how a tzaddik decides who he's going to love? And more than that, why is the Torah saying he loved Esav? What about loving Yaakov? And Rivka, a mother, you know, why doesn't it say that she doesn't love Esav? Doesn't a mother love all their children? No matter how bad your child is, you should love your child. All right. But now we want to focus a lot on this next source, the fourth source, where it really tells us a lot of important text and a lot of important Rashi over here. Okay, so we know the story. At this point, Esav had sold his birthright. And then many years pass, and we can pick up the story now. And Esav was 40 years old when he married Judith, the daughter of Be'eri the Hittite, and Bashmas, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. And they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. And it came to, okay, so that's step number one. He got married at 40, married two non-Jewish women, and they made the life bitter. And we'll see how in a minute. Next section. And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, so that he could not see, he called Esav, his oldest son, and said to him, my son. And he said to him, behold, here I am. And he said, behold, now I am old. I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I beg you, your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field, and catch me some venison, and make me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die. Okay. So what is Yitzchak saying? Esav, go out to the field, hunt some meat, bring me something to eat, something I'll enjoy, and then my soul will bless you before I die. I want to give you a blessing. This was the big one. The patriarchal blessing. A blessing from a tzaddik is a big thing. And Yitzchak wants to give the blessing to whom? To Esav. Obviously, if he wanted to give it to Esav, he felt Esav was worthy of the blessing. Or else he wouldn't want to give him a blessing. We don't see Yitzchak seeming to want to give Yaakov a blessing. We have to understand why. As we all know, Yaakov was an incredible tzaddik. He, for the first 63 years of his life, he was sitting and learning Torah his whole life. He was a complete tzaddik. Esav, on the other hand, not so good. Not so good. There's many, many sources to back it up. I gave you a few, as we'll see. But we're going to take a look in the Rashi in the fifth source. And the reason why there's a Rashi here is because if you look at the text, I mentioned this in an alternative class last Shabbos. When the Torah gives you all kinds of details that are really not relevant, you have to understand why the Torah is doing that. For example, the Torah could have said, Yitzchak called Esav over and said, do me a favor, bring me supper and I will bless you. That's pretty simple. You know, just tell, you know, bring me supper and I will bless you. But instead, it says, take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out into the field. What do I need that for? You know? And catch me some venison. And make me save food such as I love and bring it to me that I may eat it. Just say straight. He asked Esav to go prepare me a meal. What do I need the details for? A. B, the Torah says his eyes were dim. He was blind. So why does Esav tell us he's blind? What does it matter if he's blind or not? Again, every little detail, you have to ask why? Why do I need to know this? So on this first part, his eyes were dim. That's what prompts Rashi in the fifth source to give us three interpretations. They're all from the Midrash and they're all valuable. Number one, he says, why were his eyes dim? Well, let's compare to what we learned right before. What did we learn right before in this source four, the beginning? Esav married two women. And what were they? It says, and they made life bitter for Yitzchak and Rivka. Well, doesn't that say how they made life bitter? How could they make life bitter for Yitzchak and Rivka? So the rabbi says, they worshipped idols. In the family. Everyone had their own tent. They had their little own spread. Yitzchak's tent's over here. Yaakov's tent's over here. Esav's tent's over here. Esav marries two non-Jewish Canaanite women. And what did they do? They were doing idol worship. They were doing incense offerings to their gods. And that made it very bitter for them. What kind of idea do you have about who this Esav character is from this? Not a very good guy. So that's what Rashi says. Why was his eyes dim? Through the smoke they raised by these women offering incense to the idols. The smoke that came out, it damaged Yitzchak's eyes. Why did it make Rivka blind? The answer is because Rivka was used to that from her house already, a long time ago. She was raised on it. Her eyes were used to that kind of stuff, so it didn't affect her eyes. Yitzchak was a tzaddik. He never heard of this business, incense, smoke, and this and that. So actually, the smoke got in his eyes, a lot of it, and it caused his eyes to become blind. That's interpretation number one. Interpretation number two is, now, what do you see ready from interpretation number one? You see, one thing's beginning to be very clear, that what's Yitzchak's opinion of Esav as a person? What would you say if your son comes to you and says, listen, I decided to marry two Shiksa-Kananis, and they come into my house, right down the road, and they're worshiping idols, and the smoke's going all the way into your house. Would you call that a lot of Yiddish anachas? Okay, we're not talking about in the 21st century where everybody's marrying out. We're talking about the Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the patriarchs, the beginning of the Jewish people. Yitzchak, who's an incredible tzaddik. Avram, who's the Zaidi of Esav and Yaakov till they're 15 years old, is an incredible tzaddik. That's your grandfather, okay? So you could probably think that Yitzchak is quite devastated by what's going on, wouldn't you think?
What's your alternative? What was his alternative, though? Were there that many Jewish women available?
Yitzhak had an alternative. How did Yitzhak get married?
She wasn't.
How did Yitzhak get married? Where did he find a wife?
In Abraham's
home life. That's right. So, how's Yaakov going to find a wife? In Abraham's old homeland. So why couldn't Esav?
But there was still idol worshipers in
it doesn't matter, but that was a better place. That was a better place. You see, from there they got Rivka. Rivka came from there. Big Tzadekis. That's a place, no matter what's going on, that's a good place to find people. They're descendants of Shem, not descendants of Ham. And as we know, the Midrashim all said, you know, that everyone was talking that, you know, Lavan had two daughters, Rachel and Leah, and that one was destined for Yaakov, one was destined for Esav. So we have to chop around with the non-Jewish women near the Canaanites. But this was clear, it was overt. You know, many commentators say, well, you know, Yitzhak didn't really know how bad he was. Esav did all the things discreetly. You know, he did things behind his father's back. This is not behind his father's back. His father became blind from the nachas he got from his wives. Okay? It's pretty clear he knew what kind of son he had. A. Now, what's the second interpretation? Rashi in the fifth source says, another explanation is, when Yitzhak was bound upon the altar, going back when he was 37 years old, and his father was about to slay him, at that very moment the heavens opened. The ministering angels saw it and wept. They wept, and their tears flowed from the heaven and fell upon Yitzhak's eyes. A direct hit from 70 miles above in the space. They cried, the tears came flying down, and as Yitzhak's bound on the altar, plop, their tears went in his eyes. I'm just reading what the Medrash says. And from that, which thus became dim. Okay, so there's a lot of questions on this. This you hear when you're in grade 3. I used to teach this when I taught grade 3 many years ago. You tell the kids, they say, fine, you know, it's very interesting, and you go on. And that's when you learned this, when you're a young child. But now you got to look at this as an adult. You got to say, what's going on over here? Number one, how many years was it from the binding of Isaac till now? Binding of Isaac, Isaac was 37. Now, Yitzhak's 123. So, 86 years have passed. So, was this like a slow, effective tear? In other words, the tear falls in, doesn't make him blind, and 86 years later makes him blind. Is that how it worked?
Old age.
It's not old age. It's saying it's not old age. It came from the tears.
That's right.
It came from the tears. It was a slow acting tear. It took 86 years for the tear to make him blind. A. B. Do angels cry? Real tears?
That's what I was.
Are they human?
No.
Number three. Wow, what amazing aim they had. From the heavens above, which is a non-physical world, somehow it goes into the physical world, and of all spots, poof, right in his eyes. That's an incredibly difficult man. And Rashi feels important to put this in here. Now remember Rashi. Rashi is not just an editor who picks up any interesting medrash and throws it in to write a commentary. Rashi's putting things in that are necessary for us to understand the simple meaning of the text. The simple meaning of the text. In other words, Rashi felt if we didn't have these understandings, we wouldn't understand the text at all. And I am asking why. And if you didn't know that angels cried from above, who cares? It's a nice piece of information. Just like we said last week with the Tzar, nice piece of information is not a reason for a commentary to write it. Okay, he was blind. You know, when we learn a pasuk, he's blind, what does the typical person say? Oh, how did he become blind? That's not what the Torah is interested in. What we're interested in is, why did God say he was blind? Do you see the difference? When you're learning a pasuk, you have to say, why did God write that he was blind? Not how did he become blind. Who cares how he became? He became blind. Why does he have to write he became blind? The first answer is saying, well, you know, that came from the other wives. So even if you can tell me why, that's okay, you answered my curiosity. But why do I need to know that? Why do I need to know his eyes became blind from these women? Why do I need to know that these angels cried and made him blind for that? Why do I need to know that? How does it make me understand the story better? The third one, at least, the third answer, at least, seems to make a little bit of sense. Another explanation is they became dim just in order that Yaakov might receive the blessings. The only way Yaakov could have stole the blessings was by Yitzhak being blind, and he couldn't see that Yaakov went in. All right, that at least gives us a pragmatic answer that we can sort of live with. The Torah had to tell us he was blind, because if he wasn't blind, how else would Yaakov be able to steal the blessings? All right, that one's reasonable. But the first two are just, you know, it's wild, wild things going on over here, especially the second one. So what's the message for us? How does it make the reading any better for us? So then the Medrash in source 6 continues with the additional verbiage where Yitzhak says to Esav, go take your weapons, your quiver, your bow, and go out to the land and catch you some venison. What's all that about? So the Medrash says like this, and I can't get into all the Hebrew grammar that explains all this. You just have to take the word for the Medrash. I put a lot of dot, dot, dots because I'm not going through all those proofs. But the literal meaning is sharpen your weapons. Look what he says. Say, you do not feed me with improperly slaughtered animals. Make sure I'm getting a kosher meal. If he has to warn him for that, what is he assuming otherwise? That, you know, imagine you have a child. Let's say you have a child. Yeah, many of us have children that are not religious. They're very secular, and they're going to invite you to their house, and you still keep kosher. You're still archaic. You're still from, you know, from the old country, and you keep kosher. And they're modern. They don't keep kosher, and they invite you to their house for Shabbos. What are you going to tell them? Can you please make sure I have kosher food? Yeah, because they don't keep kosher, right? That's understandable. If your son is very careful and is kosher. Let's say another. Let's say you have a child who's very religious, and they invite you for Shabbos. You have to say, "Oh, by the way, make sure the food is kosher." So now, what's Yitzhak saying to Esav here? By the way, make sure the food is kosher. Make sure you slaughter it properly. Wow. What does that mean? That means I know you don't keep kosher. So we know now, Yitzhak knows a lot what's going on over here. Even if we want to say that Esav was trying to fool him, he didn't fool his father. His father, number one, is blind because his wives are worshiping idols right under his nose. Number two, he's telling Esav, make sure it's kosher this time. So he knows his kid doesn't keep kosher either. Okay? And you keep going. So that you do not, and suspend your weapons. The next clause, say you do not feed with animals stolen or robbed from others. And don't give me stuff that you stole, because I know you steal a lot also.
Wow.
Alright? I mean, this father knows. Some of you have parents who are blind. They don't know. They don't machnet vishendik. They don't know. But the first thing, you know everything. You don't keep kosher, you steal, you're into idol worship. I mean, it's the big three. I mean, it's all kinds of terrible stuff going on here. Now, then the Medrash, that's bad enough. Then the Medrash goes into something really wild. He says another interpretation, each one of these clauses is referring to one of the four exiles the Jews are going to go through. Your weapons, your vessels symbolize Babylonia, your quiver alludes to Media, your bow alludes to Greece, go out to the field symbolizes Edom. Those are the four exiles the Jews would one day go through. This, Yitzhak informed Esav that Yaakov's descendants would be subject to the dominion of the four kingdoms, Babylon, Media, Greece, and Edom. What does this have to do with anything? You know why the detailed deal? He's hinting there's going to be four exiles. Okay, Yaakov's going to have four exiles. Why is Yaakov going to have four exiles? What does that have to do with anything that's going on over here? Okay, let's go on. Source 7. So what happens? Esav goes out into the field. Rivka hears what's going on. She tells Yaakov, you're going to go and dress up like Esav. Fine. Puts on the special clothes. She prepares a meal fast. He's in there right away. And Yitzchak isn't any the wiser, and he thinks Esau's come back very quickly. So in source 7, and Isaac said to his son, how is it that you found it so quickly, my son? Hey, you came back pretty fast. And he said, what did Yaakov disguised as Esau say? Because the Lord your God brought it to me. Hashem help me. Hashem help me. Hey, Baruch Hashem, I had siyata d'shmaya. Hashem help me.
Yeah.
And Isaac said to Jacob, come near, I beg you, that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son or not. He's getting a little suspicious. And Yaakov went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him. He said, Hakol kol Yaakov v'yadayim b'dei Esau. The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. Now, what does it mean it's the voice of Yaakov? What does it mean it's the voice of Yaakov? It's his voice? Well, if he thought it was his voice, you know, can't you tell a voice? If he tells the voice was Yaakov, then why does he have to feel him? He knows it's the wrong guy.
It's a behavior.
I understand. If the voice is the voice of Yaakov, let's say you have two sons, Yaakov, they have two different voices. If you hear right away, say, what are you doing here, Yaakov? When I'm on the phone, I can tell the difference between all mine and my children. When they're on the phone, if the connection is clear, I'm not talking about a very garbled, if it's a normal, nice connection, I know exactly who I'm talking to. Right? So if Yaakov spoke like Yaakov, maybe he had a high, squeaky voice, and Esau had a low, gruff voice.
Sure.
Right? So let me feel you. If the voice is the voice of Yaakov, don't go bless this guy. It's the wrong voice. The answer is, the rabbis say, that Yaakov and Esau's sound of their voice was the same. They sounded the same. They spoke. When you hear them on, if you hear them on a phone, you wouldn't know who you're talking to. So then the question is, so what do you mean the voice is the voice of Yaakov? So now look at Rashi. Source number 8. How did Yitzchak know that this was the voice of Yaakov? Yitzchak said to himself, it's not the way of Esau to have the name of heaven fluent in his mouth. You know, I've known Esau for a long time. He never said, oh, Mirtz Hashem, I'll do this. Baruch Hashem, I'll do this. Oh, Hashem, help me. Esau never brings Hashem into his discussions. You know, let's say, you have two children. One is very religious. You have this nowadays. People who are not so frum, and they have children. One's very religious and one's totally secular, right? So you call your religious child before Shabbos. So how are you doing? Oh, Baruch Hashem, everything's fine. Oh, Hashem is so kind to us. Amir Tzashem, when are you going to visit? Amir Tzashem, in 2 weeks we'll come and visit you. Right? How's the Parnassa doing? Well, not so good, but Amir Tzashem, Hashem will help us. Hashem's testing us. We're trying our best. He calls the secular son. How are you doing? Okay.
Cool.
How's business doing? I'm great. I'm an incredible business partner. Or, you know, business doing good, but I'll fix it up. When are you going to come? I plan on coming next week. You don't hear a word of Hashem from that one. So Yisrael says, I don't get it. Because this one says what? And this one is saying, because the Lord, your God, brought it to me. He's saying, you know, Hashem, help me. What kind of business is this? So he's in doubt. But what does he know? What does he know about the real Esav? That's the point of real. What does he know about the real Esav? The real Esav does not talk about Hashem. At all. So now, let's get this profile, even from Yitzchak's perspective. See, a lot of people think Yitzchak just was fooled by Esau. He was fooled by Esau, right? He loved him because he gave him venison. Just a bumbling old man who got venison and didn't want to know, you know, didn't want to know about anything. You know. So the Drashim are clearly telling us what? He knows he's married to shiksas who are worshiping idol worship. We know that he doesn't keep kosher. We know that he steals. We know he doesn't talk about God's name. I mean, I could give you many, many more sources. For example, we know that Avram died at 175. He was supposed to live till he was 180. Another 5 years. Why did he die 5 years earlier? Because God promised that he'd die in a good old age with nachas from his children and grandchildren. But the problem is, that when Esav turned 15, he publicly was involved in murder, rape, idol worship. And Hashem said, that's not going to be a good old age for Avram to hear he has an einikol that's gone off the derech. So it's better that Avram should die 5 years early. Now, if Avram had died 5 years early, because only that's when it became public knowledge. In other words, Esau was doing it before 15, but secretly. But by 15, this was like, you know, he was a real gang leader, a gang juvenile delinquent, that everybody would know. That's why Avram had to die. That means obviously Yitzchak knew about it. So plain and simple, from this and all these sources, it is clear that Yitzchak understood that Esav is what we would call a Rasha. Wouldn't you, if you're trying to rate a Jew, okay, married to a non-Jew, and they go to church every day. This is what I mean, the incense. I mean, put it in contemporary terms. How would you classify your child? He marries two non-Jews, they go to church every day, and they're doing the whole blown thing. Not to say a 10-day, they're really into this. They don't keep kosher, they steal, okay? They never talk about God. What would you call this guy? An average Jew? He's a Rasha. It's not good to Hashem. It's not good to people. Forget about it. He said, no, he's a good Jew. He just doesn't do the ritual. What about the ritual? He steals. What do you want? He's a bad Jew. And this is the one Yitzchak's going to give the most important patriarchal blessing to. Right? This is very difficult to understand. And Yitzchak is of sound mind and of sound body. Okay, there's a major, major problem over here. Now, in spite of all that, there's a Zohar that seems to contradict everything I just said. That's what makes it even harder. Source number 10. We're skipping 9 for the moment. Listen to the Zohar. You might ask, how is it that Yitzchak knew not all of Esau's evil deeds? I wasn't asking that question. I was asking a different question. My question is, he knew of all his evil deeds. Why is he blessing? Well, the Zohar is saying, no, you don't understand it. He didn't know it. So I really don't understand the first line of the Zohar. Right? You understand? He knew not. How is it that Yitzchak knew not all of Esau? What do you mean? He knew them all. Now the Zohar is very smart. Rav Shimon bar Yochai is very, very smart. He knows a million times more than anybody in this room knows. So that means everything I just taught you for the last half an hour is totally wrong. Certainly, and he says more, certainly the Shekhinah was with him. I mean, when a tzaddik's around, it's not like me and you, we just use our brains. You know, it's something called the Shekhinah, the divine presence that expands your brains to see things really clearly. That's living with the Shekhinah. You know, it's like being in your house is the Beis Hamikdash. It's not like me and you just being aware of what's going on. It's like the Shekhinah. That means God is telling you what's going on more. You got God's wisdom in your brain. That means you're seeing things that others can't see. You know, how do you know these Hasidic Rebbes with all these stories? Because Rebbe, go over here, it's going to be okay. And the guy says, what are you talking about? He's my enemy. Just go, it's going to be fine. And everything was perfect. Why? Because Hashem was showing the Rebbe what should be done. That's the Shekhinah. So you got the Shekhinah with Yitzchak. So how could he know what's going on? And it's proof. What's the proof the Shekhinah's with him? For if the Shekhinah was not present with him, how could he have blessed Yaakov when he did? What are the blessings worth? What's a blessing on a tzaddik worth if the Shekhinah isn't with him? What's the big, I give you a blessing. Here. I'm going to give you a blessing. I'm going to give you a good. So what are my 5 words worth? We go to holy people for blessings. Why? What do I care? How does that change anything? Because a holy person is imbued with the Shekhinah. He's right next, he's with God. So when he's talking, it's like God's talking. So that's important. So Yitzchak, he was going to give these great blessings. Must be the Shekhinah was with him. So the Shekhinah was with him. So I'm asking, forget about the Shekhinah. Anybody would have known what was going on. Yitzchak certainly knew. The Zohar is saying, doubly hard. He had the Shekhinah with him. How could he have not known? So I'm asking, what do you mean he didn't know? Of course he knew. And with the Shekhinah, on top of you telling me he doesn't know? What's going on? And listen, this answer is going to be even more difficult than the question. Okay, so right, we don't understand the question. A. And now we're going to hear the answer. The truth is that the Shekhinah indeed dwelt with him always. Yes, he had the Shekhinah. But it did not reveal Esav's deeds to him. It's saying, you know, sometimes Shekhinah showed him a little bit, but didn't show him everything. Like Shekhinah says, okay, this I'm going to show you, this I'm not going to show you. Okay, I could accept that. But again, even if the Shekhinah didn't show him, but you don't need the Shekhinah to see that your eyes are blind from these women. You know, all these things we proved, even without the Shekhinah, he should have known this. Now, why does Hashem do this? So that Yaakov should be blessed without his knowledge. He wanted Yaakov to be blessed by Yitzchak without Yitzchak realizing he's blessing Yaakov. Right? That's why he didn't let him know who the real Esav was. Which we don't understand, because it appears he did know who the Esav is. But he didn't let him know how bad Esav was, so he wants to bless Esav. And therefore, Yaakov has to masquerade and steal the blessing. Why? Because Hashem wanted Yaakov the blessings without Yitzchak knowing it. Why? Why couldn't it be like this? Yitzchak knows how bad Esav is. Esav's a rotten creep. He says, my dear Esav, you're a rotten creep. I'm not giving you a blessing. I'm going to give it to Yaakov and give Yaakov the blessing and finished. No. Hashem says, I want him to bless Yaakov without him even knowing he's blessing Yaakov. And how is he blessing him? But only by the will of the Holy One, blessed is he. He wanted the blessing to only be as Hashem's will, as if Yitzchak's a puppet. As if he's just a mouth without a brain. In other words, Yitzchak don't bless him without even knowing who he's blessing. And it's really just Hashem blessing him. You know, so this Zohar is so hard from the beginning to the end. It's like from the beginning, I don't understand one word of this Zohar. I don't understand what it means to say Yitzchak didn't know what's going on. I don't understand what it means Hashem let him know a little bit, but didn't let him know. And why? Because he didn't want Yitzchak to know he was blessing Yaakov. Why not? Well, because he wanted, really, because it really only the Shekhinah was blessing him. So if only the Shekhinah was blessing him, let Hashem just bless Yaakov straight. What are you mixing around Yitzchak for? Right? And what does it mean, blessing by the will of Hashem? What does that even mean? So this is incredibly difficult things. Right? You had a question, Milton?
But where's Rivka in all this?
Ah, that's another question. That's a good question. It's a good question. I don't know if I have time to answer it in the limited time, but based on what I'm saying, we can extrapolate why she's not involved. But I'll try to bring it in the middle of the discussion here. Okay, I'll try to. But it's a good question and there's a good answer to the question. Yeah?
The Zohar says that he didn't see the bad thing he did, right?
That's what it seems
so
to be saying.
So if he didn't see it, so he doesn't think bad of him. Yep. So what's so difficult not to
understand? Okay, but I just spent a half an hour showing you that he did see how bad he was.
Okay, but we're talking about the Zohar.
Okay, so I don't understand what the Zohar is saying. Even according to the Zohar, what's the big deal that Yaakov should be blessed without Yitzchak knowing who he's blessing? I don't understand that either.
Because it's the power of making the blessing of the Bechor.
So let Hashem bless him. Finished. I don't need you. I don't need you to know what you're doing anyway.
Because Hashem need Esav to blame Yaakov? Didn't there need to be...
That's right.
They could blame him anyway. Very simple. Yitzchak can call Esav in. I just want to tell you, you're a loser. Get out of here. Yaakov's the good guy. He's getting it. That's enough to make Esav hate Yaakov. He's a Russia. Remember, he's a Russia.
It'll make him hate him, but not blame him.
He'll blame him. Yeah. Rishayim don't need much excuse. We don't need this whole charade. This whole charade's not important. Why did Hashem make this whole charade? Just do it simple. Esav, you're a wicked guy. Sorry. You're out of the game. Finished. And you know what? And once you're a Russia, you know, I know, you're too nice. You don't know how Russia thinks. Just for a minute, pretend you're a Russia. I know that's hard, but pretend you're a Russia. Now, Russia just thinks everything's for me. Nobody deserves anything else, right? Do you think a Russia has any little problem with sibling rivalry, maybe? Right? So, if Yitzchak will just say, sorry, you were the firstborn, but you didn't cut it. Your younger brother, the little wimpy guy who's studying Torah all day long, he's going to be the real Jewish people. Now, Yitzchak said, oh, I understand. I understand perfectly. Okay. That's how Russia's going to respond? Okay. You're a mother, you have children. You know, what do you do when you give a reward to one and not to the others, even when it's deserved? Oh, that goes very easily. Goes very easily. Yes. Now, your children are not anywhere close to Esav, a Russian. Not even close. They're nice kids. And even nice kids have sibling rivalry. Now just make him a Russian and see what would happen. So he doesn't need the excuse for Yaakov stealing the blessings from him. He'll hate him anyway. You get the same job done. Very, very difficult what's going on over here. And in general, what's this whole concept of a blessing? You know, and doesn't a blessing really need kavanah? Doesn't it need understanding who you're blessing? I mean, do you need it or do you not need it?
Well, why does Esav even care about a blessing?
That's another good
a religion he doesn't believe.
That's in. Another good question that would need
it's money.
You know how it is. Wicked people, they always want to cover up.
It's money.
No, because it's power.
Land, really.
Power they'll take from anybody. Power will take from anybody. And you know, why does Yaakov have to get this blessing in such a sneaky way? There's all kinds of problems over here. And what's really interesting is, okay, so now Yaakov goes in now, and he thinks it's Esav.
Okay.
Right when he goes in, let's going back now to source number 9. It says he smelled, when Yaakov went in, Yitzchak smelled something. He smelled the smell of Bigadav. Bigadav means his clothes. Mm-hmm. He smelled his clothes. Yitzchak smelled Yaakov's clothes when Yaakov walked in. He thought it was Esav. He thinks Esav's in front of him, but he's blind. He smells his clothes. What do you mean he smells his clothes? What does that mean he smells his clothes? What kind of business? Is this a perfume story over here? Again, what's the details? So you have to know the word in Hebrew, Big Gadav, Beis Gimel Dalet Yud Vav, Big Gadav, the same letters, if you change the dots, spells the word Bogadav, which means betrayers. And what it says is that Yitzchak got a vision of the future, a prophetic vision. Who did he think was walking in? Esav. He thought it was Esav because Yaakov was wearing Esav's clothes, so it smelled a little bit like his clothes. But Rashi said, the Kama Medrash says, don't read it only his clothes, but his betrayers. He prophetically saw betrayal. And I didn't have time on the page to write for you. The Medrash goes into two very long stories about Jews who betrayed their religion.
Wow.
One of them, whose name was Yosef Meshisa, and another whose name was Yaakov Yisrorot. And they did incredible betrayals. One of them, when the enemies entered the Temple Mount, and they were afraid to go in, so they needed a Jew to go in first. You know, have the chutzpah. When the Greeks came in, they wanted to go into the temple and sully it. We're a little scared. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, just like before, our king's going to take his meal. He's going to have somebody taste the food first. You know, just mm-hmm. in case. So okay, we'll find a Jew. A Jew will go in, and we'll say, you can go in as a commoner and take whatever you want. Would you think that's a pretty bad Jew would do that? So this guy, this fellow over here, Yosef Meshisa, he goes right and says, sure, I'll do it. This is a descendant of Yaakov. And this is what Yitzchak's seeing in the future. A betrayer. And then there's another story of Yaakov Yisroros, another man who sold out to the Greeks while his uncle was being led to death. And that he saw the future of betrayers. And the pasuk seems to say he smelled the clothing and now he blessed them. So now, and he thinks it's Esav. So notwithstanding all the evil he knows his sons already does, he already sees in the future what evil is going to come from him, and now I'm going to bless him. It's incredibly difficult, all of this. And there's so many other questions, I'm not going to have time to get to all of them. And even afterwards, when he finds out what happens, and when he finds out the truth that it was Yaakov and it wasn't Esav, the Medrash in source 11 tells us, God is very patient, but he eventually gathers in what is due to him. Now what happened? After Esav found out he was tricked, he started to cry. Thus Yaakov caused Esav to cry out once. And he paid for this in the capital city of Shushan. And as it said, Mordechai cried with a loud and bitter cry. It seems that Yaakov got punished for making Esav cry. It wasn't nice. I didn't cry. So the Jews would be punished later that Esav's descendants would make Yaakov's descendants cry. When Haman wanted to kill the Jews, it says that Mordechai cried. What's going on? Did Yaakov do the right thing or the wrong thing? If his mother told him to do it, so what do I care that Esav cried? He's supposed to cry. He's in Russia. He lost out. No, because Yaakov made him cry. Don't think God overlooked that. Oh, no, 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 no. Jews are going to pay for it. Why should they pay for that? Right? And finally, when Yitzhak really realized what happened, he does give Esav a blessing in source number 12, and the Medrash explains what the blessing is. If you see that your brother has shaken off the yoke of the Torah, decreed destruction upon him, you will dominate him. He said, I give you the blessing of successful anti-Semitism. This is the blessing that gave Hitler the power to kill 6 million Jews. And all the pogroms throughout 2,000 years of Jewish history, they're all descendants of Esav. How was Rome able to destroy the temple and kill tens of thousands of Jews? If you see that Yaakov takes the yoke of Torah off, decree destruction, you will dominate him. That's my blessing to you. That's what it's all about. So we have to understand what's going on here. There's too many difficulties to let this go by. So there's a number of things we could say, and as time allows, we'll try to get as much as possible. But let's start with this. We have to remember that the patriarchs were building a new way of life. They were internalizing godly qualities into their life, which the world, the pagan world, was totally not in tune to. As we said, that Avram brought kindness to the world. That's how he found his way to Hashem. And all the tests he went through in life were to test him to exactly know, are you really a kind person properly or not? Which I don't have time to go over, but that was Avram's whole life, was to develop the attribute of kindness in a godly way. That was Avram's life. And he was successful. But he had challenges. He had to know exactly when to use it, when not to use it. Challenges. He had to kick his shmuel out of the house. He had to kill his son. Those are challenges, but that was his thing. Kindness, expansiveness, sharing with others, being open with others. And that was a beautiful attribute that the world didn't have. It's a godly attribute that he was able to bring up. Yitzhak, on the other hand, his role in life was different. He was to develop another personality trait called gvura, control, strength, to show strength in so many areas, self-control, to be able to resist certain inclinations and certain impulses, putting everything in the right place, to have a spiritual strength and stamina, to have a consistency, to nullify your will, to do the will of Hashem. That's more of what we call a contraction, as we talk about in other classes. There's expansion and contraction. There's an attribute of spreading yourself all over everybody else. That's expansion. I'm giving and I'm kind and I'm thinking of everybody else, which is a great quality to have. But you can't go overboard in it. And then there's another wonderful quality. Sometimes you got to control yourself. And now that, sometimes you have to control other people if they're doing the wrong things. You have to discipline people. Where do you think law and order comes from? Love or control? It comes from control. Law and order. And Yitzhak was the extreme. Very extreme. He had tremendous strength of character. He couldn't do an avera at all. And this difference is reflected in a beautiful medrash. Where do you see it's coming out? You notice Yitzchak is going to give blessings to his children. Now, when Avram, before he died, did he bless Yitzchak?
No.
What do you mean? Well, the man of kindness didn't bless his son before he died?
Didn't it?
So the Medrash goes into this and says why he didn't bless and Yitzchak did bless, which seems to be the opposite. So it's Bereishis Rabbah. I only gave you a little bit because I didn't have room, but I'll speak out the rest. It says, source 13, Avram did not bless Yitzchak but gave him gifts. Why did he not bless him? This may be compared to a king who had an orchard which he entrusted to a gardener, ... Well, what was going on with that garden over there? The gardener had to take care of two trees, but the two trees were intertwined and joined at the root. One head of the tree was a beautiful orchard that could give beautiful fruit. The other side of the tree was a poisonous tree. So the gardener wasn't sure what to do. The garden says, if I water the tree for the beautiful fruits, the other thing's going to get watered too. And it's going to cause more poison in the world. And if I don't water them, you know, so he was, I don't know what to do. So he just says, listen, I'm the gardener. I do my job. And whatever the master wants me to do about watering, I'll leave it up to the master who he wants to water. I'm just going to tend to the garden. The master can decide who gets the drinks. I'm not going to get involved in this. It's too difficult. I'm going to give this drink, this going to drink. Not my job. Avram is like that analogy. Because what was the intertwined plants that he had? Yitzchak and Yishmael. And not just Yishmael, and all the children of Keturah from Hagar in last week's Parsha. He had a lot of children, not just Yitzchak. So he says, if I bless Yitzchak, I'll incite the children of Yishmael and Keturah against him. Yet if I don't bless Yitzchak, right, and if I don't bless him, then how am I going to bless Yitzchak? So what am I going to do? He didn't know what to do. He decided, I'm but mortal here today, in the grave tomorrow. I've already done my part. Now let Hashem decide what he wants to decide. I'm not getting involved by making any blessings here. When Avram died, Hashem revealed himself to Yitzchak, and Hashem blessed Yitzchak. Now, why was Avram not able to do it? You know why? Because he was a man of kindness. The man of kindness can't hurt anybody. The man of kindness, what am I going to do? I'm going to give you the bracha, not you the bracha? I can't do that. As much as I want to be kind, but I can never hurt a fly. So it's like the gardener. I wish I could give Yitzchak blessings, but I'm hurting the other guys. You know, I can't do that. I'm the man of kindness. Okay, you're the man of kindness. But Yitzchak, he's the man of gvura, of control, of judgment, of decisions. He says, if he gets a blessing, he gets a blessing. What about the other guy? Too bad for the other guy. That's gvura. That's control. That's power. That's doing things the way they're supposed to be done. There's two attributes. One attribute is, well, I'm thinking about everybody every minute of the day. I'm so expanded. And when I do something with you, I'm worried what you're going to think and what you're going to think, what you're going to think, because I'm so expanded all over the place. The other person is contracted. He says, listen, I only know one thing. I know what's right. And what's right, I have to do. And if I decided you get the blessing, that's your problem. You got to live by the controls that I put into this world. I'm not saying one is right and one is wrong. They're both godly and important characteristics. It's two different approaches of reaching God. Okay? So, the man of gvura, of control, when he makes a decision, he is 100% sure of his decision, and that's how he goes through life. And therefore, Yitzchak, which we'll have to explain, if he decides Esau's supposed to get a bracha, then that's the decision. Finished. That's the law. That's the judgment. What's right is right. Finished. Avram is the man of kindness. He finds it difficult to make distinctions between people. Between Yitzchak and Shmuel. He couldn't even throw Yishmael out of the house. Person of kindness, he just loves everybody. Right? While Yitzchak, who's law and order, he's justice, if he feels by law, Esav deserves the blessings, which we still don't understand why, he gives it to him. So what Yitzchak was doing here was a photocopy of his whole life. That's what his whole life was. Because look what his whole life was. Look in source number 14 and you'll see it more than anything else. I'll say it outside for time. You know, it is something that should have shocked you. It said, and Yitzchak's eyes grew dim. What does that mean? It means he got sick. He got sick. Now, you don't find anywhere in the Torah until this point that somebody ever got sick. So the Midrash tells us that Yitzchak's the first person to get physically sick. And where did it come from? Yitzchak asked God for it. Yitzchak said, you know, if people never get sick, they're never going to do tshuva. If a person does averus, and does averus, and does averus, and Hashem just lets him have a wonderful life, eventually he's going to stack the deck with averus. When he leaves this world, Hashem's going to give it to him, as law and order would suggest. Yitzchak said, you know what? I don't like this system. I prefer that if somebody does something wrong, they should get it while they're still alive. There should be justice in this world. And how do I mean it? Make people sick. If a person deserves something, you give it to them. Right? And then if he did something wrong, he deserves, punish him here in this world. Let him deal with it. Let him do tshuva. Then at the end of the day, he can clean things up. That's a lot better. Now, Avram could never ask of such a thing to make people not well, because he's a man of kindness. He's a man of justice. Let justice prevail. So that's a great idea. He's like, you know, we're going to start with you. And Hashem made him blind. He had no problems. He said, okay, I'm blind. You think it's better for me to be blind? I've got no complaints. I live the way you want me to live my life. Okay. So now, that's what we have. We have Avram is the man of kindness. He doesn't make distinctions between people. He's the man that finds trouble blessing one and not blessing the other. And he says, God, you have to decide these things. Yitzchak, on the other hand, had a different approach, which is also a godly approach. Self-control. And he's able to control himself. And if he needs to, he'll control others to keep them away from bad things. But that person makes distinctions and is very clear, very judgmental. And when he makes a judgment, and that's it. Now, what's going to happen here, and I'm going to try to oversimplify this. It's very complicated. I'm going to make it very simple. What was supposed to happen? You had Avram. You have Yitzchak. Okay, now there's a plan for the Jewish people. So what's the next generation supposed to be? The next generation, Hashem really wanted Yitzchak and Rivka to have 12 children. And we're ready to start the 12 tribes of the Jewish people. That was supposed to be the next step. We have Chesed, we have Gvur, we don't need anything else. Let's go start, build the Jewish people. All we need is two patriarchs. And Yitzchak and Rivka are supposed to have 12 children, says the Medrash. Since the baby was kicking inside, she says, what do I need this pain in the neck for? Hashem says, I want to give you many children. You're complaining? This is all you're going to get. Wow. This is all you're going to get. Whatever you got here, that's it. The rest you're not getting. So now it's going to be a little modification of the plan now. You're not getting 12. You're getting 2. You're getting 2. And now, instead of 12, you're going to get 2. And one of them is going to model everything about Avram's life. And one of them is going to model everything of Yitzchak's life. One of them is going to be like an Avram who's kind, who thinks of other people. And the greatest kindness you can do in the world, what's the greatest thing to help the whole world, is to learn Torah. There's too many words of the rabbis that said how many blessings come from the learning of Torah. Obviously, you're also going to do actual kindness, but the greatest kindness, that's what it says we say it every morning. These are the mitzvahs that a person gets the benefits of this one in the next world. I'm talking about all these man-to-man mitzvahs, escorting the dead, being kind to the poor, all these mitzvahs. It says, but Torah is better than all of them. The greatest kindness. You bring so much blessing in the world. Yes, I can give money, but I can give to the source of money. The Torah that comes in the world is the greatest blessing. Yes, Yaakov. One son was designed. What was going to be now a partnership. There'll be one son who is a masters this idea of kindness. And then you got the other one who masters gevura and control. You can't have one without the other. Avram alone is too imbalanced. Yitzchak alone is too imbalanced. You need both. Yitzchak, you would have been able to be the father of the entire tribes, and 12 would have come up, but you messed up on that. So it's going to be one will have 6 tribes, and another will have 6 tribes. And the plan obviously was, Yaakov is the Ishtam Yoshev Olim. He'll be the man to resemble his grandfather Avram. He'll learn Torah, and he will bring all kinds of good into the world. The other child, Esav, he'll be the man who will master control. Now, you need control for a lot of things. You know, for example, we live in Eretz Yisrael, right? Jews live in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what do we need in Eretz Yisrael? We need yeshivas. We need yeshivas to teach Torah, to show us what real kindness is, through acts of kindness, and to make it a country full of kindness. Yes, we do. But we have Arabs who want to destroy us. So you need very strong people who are willing to cut, who are able to judge and kill when necessary and defend when necessary and go out and do all kinds of not pleasant things to protect your land and to provide you with security. There's a lot of people in this world who don't want the world to be kind. They don't want a moral world, and they will destroy us. So, you know, just like in every society, you need to have university professors, and you have to have guys who work on the vice squad also. Don't you? So that's the way the plan was going to be. That Yaakov would be the one who would take Avram's place, and we call him the Asay Tov man. Do good, bring good, teach good, spread it all over. But on the other hand, we know there's a world out there, there's people who aren't so good. What about the Jews who don't behave so good? What are the Jews who will undermine the Jewish people? There's got to be someone who takes a stick and knows when to hit when it's necessary. When to make discriminations, when to say, this is not good, this is not what Judaism is. Who to punish? You need judges to judge people. You need soldiers to defend the people. You have to have a lot of gvura for that. You have to have chayalim. And that would be what Esav would be. So children are different, and then each one has a different role. And Yitzchak envisioned that Yaakov would be the man in the books, and yet Esav would be the man who's outdoors. And that's understood that would be paralleling more. So, and that's what the hope was. Okay? So now, growing up, and he sees this is exactly what's happening. Yaakov, he's studying and learning Torah. Baruch Hashem, he's doing fine. He's doing very good in his learning. Now, who has the harder job? What is the harder job in life? Developing the quality of kindness or developing the quality of control? It's much harder to develop the quality of control. You know why? Because you are thrown into an ugly, disgusting world. Control means, again, how does King David say it? Who's a good person? Person has to be sur mayra, stay away from evil, vase tov, and do good. Well, evil is really bad. And when evil is tempting you, it's a fight, it's a war, it's really hard. And therefore, it needs a lot more strength to be able to resist the evil than to do that which is kind. And the harder of the two jobs, believe it or not, is the one of sur mayra, stay away from evil. Shogvura is a gibor hakoveshes yitzro, where the rabbi said, if God wouldn't help you, no one can destroy their yetzahar. No one can overcome it. It's the hardest thing. It doesn't say if God doesn't help you, you couldn't get up in the morning to daven. It doesn't say if God doesn't help you, you can't give tzedakah. It doesn't say if God doesn't help you, don't learn Torah. It says if God doesn't help you, you can't overcome your yetzahara. Now that's a tough job. And the truth of the matter is, it comes with struggles, it comes with failures, and it will come with hopefully overcoming those failures and success. So what does Yitzchak see in front of himself? So that means when they were born with certain natures, they were born, and that's what the prophet was telling when Rivka went to Shem and Eber, said, what's going on? He says, you have two different nations coming out of your stomach. Two different personalities. Don't compare these two fellows. And Yaakov was born with a gentler soul. A soul that only would want to gravitate to beautiful and fine and nice things. And what he has to just follow the program. Just every day get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and learn Torah all day long, try to help people, develop that. And as long as you are into it and you're using your efforts in it, you will succeed. But the other one has to be born with big yetzer hara, a big evil inclination. Why? Because that's the one, that's what he's got to conquer. Right? If you can be born with a big Yetzer Tov, so just use it. But you can be born with a big Yetzer Hara, you have to now overcome it, destroy it, and you be a role model for others. So, Yitzhak understood everything that was going on over here. He understood, you have two different children in your house. How is it that one child always wants to do the right thing? Always wants to be pleasing, always wants to oblige. And you can see that when they're even 3 years old. I remember one time on Yom Kippur, one of my children, when she was 3 years old, she was 3 years old, she came into the shul. I sat right up next to the rabbi, and there was another guy there. And the rabbi was, and she came with a big bag of candy, all the kids have candy. So one of the balabas said to my daughter, could I have a candy, please? So right away she opens up and gives her the candy. So the rabbi said, I never saw a kid like that. You ask a three-year-old to give a candy without even just give it up. So Taka, that child has a special soul. Not that the other children aren't wonderful and great, but, you know, God bless you with that kind of soul. How many three-year-olds would just give a candy, you know? When they say, give me a candy. No, they start crying. You know, they did this thing, I don't know. Somebody told me that this YouTubers, I don't know, this thing, these mock things where they tell the parents to take videos of the kids after Halloween. They say, you know, I ate up all your candies. To lie to the kids, see how they react. And like almost every one of them was crying, screaming, yelling, tantrums, I hate you, you want to die. Terrible. And then they say, I was just joking, you know, but. One or two says, that's okay.
That's good.
You know?
Only one.
Now, that, you have to have a special nature for that. So Hashem blessed Yaakov with a nature to want to do good. That's the nature. And then we know we have certain children that they didn't have that nature. Not because they're bad. That's Hashem didn't give them that. Hashem gave them a different nature because they have a different role to play. Hashem gave him a nature that has lusts and taivas and this and that. Why? Because now your job is to overcome those. And you have to be the role model how a person can overcome those deficiencies. And you will develop a strength that has to be, just like you work out in the club, that you don't know how to pick up any, you can't bench press anything. And you gotta train yourself to bench press. So you gotta bench press your Yetzirah. And that will take a lot of hard work. But at the end of the day, the one who has to resist sin and successfully does that is infinitely greater than the one who just goes on a nice track of doing good to other people. So Hashem gave, when it came out to neshamas, he gave Yaakov the neshama to be a good, kind, sweet person. And Esav the neshama to be a rotten creep. And he'd have to develop the quality of control. And if he would develop it, he would be the most amazing role model in the history of the world. That was the split. And therefore, Esau was born first. He was born first. Because that really, he had the potential, if he would reach it, to be greater than Yaakov. And Esau and Yitzhak understood all of this. Because Yitzhak, he was a Gvura man. He understood this. Rivka, on the other hand, which I don't have time to prove, she was a chesed woman, because we know from last week's parsha, she went and was willing to give water not just to Eliezer, but for everybody. So here you have two titans, Yitzhak, the supreme warrior, Gvura, control. So, but he said, go kill me, Dad, just tie me up so I don't do anything, I don't flinch. You know what that takes? Mm-hmm. Control? Well, Rivka, she gives. Okay. So now, to answer your question. So Yitzchak now has to make a decision. He knows what's going on. He knows that Esav is doing this aver and that aver and this aver, but he also knows why. Because Hashem gave him this incredibly big Yetzirah. It wasn't like they were created equal. Yaakov, he's not interested in pretty women. He's not interested in power. That's not what his thing is into that. He's just interested in learning Torah. And Yaakov sits down in front of the books. His Zadie Avram's learning Torah with him. Shaman Avery, the learning Torah. He's studious boy. He's doing his job. He's not lazy. Yitzchak, he's doing fine. He's doing fine. Yes, Esav's path to begin with is a very difficult path. And he sees, oh, I see Taka, he likes this. He likes to kill people. He's really into this stuff. And Yitzchak spends a lot of time with him, talking to him. Sitting down like a father to a son, trying to show him, you know, there's another way you can do this and you can succeed. And the more time you give to somebody, the more you connect. And that's what it means. The Torah says, and Yitzchak loved Esav. Not the way we talk about love. Love means, love, we said, means bonded. Feels connected, bonded. Yitzchak was bonded to Esav because he had the same personality type. I think as a parent, you know your personality type, and you'll have different children, and some children will be more like your personality and less like yours. If you like it or not, you know, we don't like to say the word, but you will feel more bonded with one child than another, and that really is love. It's not a crime, just don't let anybody know about it. But no, this one is more like you, you feel closer, it's easier. The other one, she's the exact opposite of me. I get gray hairs over this one. So the Torah says Yitzchak loved Esav. It means he felt closer to him because they had the same challenges in life. Rivka, on the other hand, had the similar issues like Yaakov and felt closer to Yaakov. Now, so Yitzchak understands. He knows Yaakov's doing his job better than Esav. He's not a fool. He knows that. But he says, you know what? But we got to keep working on it because you know, there's a rule. He knows Esav's a sinner, but we also know the rule. In the place where the Baal Tshuva stands, the complete tzaddik can't even be in his place. And Yaakov will never be a Baal Tshuva because he's only a tzaddik. Esav, as low as he's fallen, if he does tshuva, can you imagine how great he is going to be? And we know in history there were people, yes, like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva hated Jews, hated rabbis. But you see all that power, all that hate, all that control. Now let's get on the right side and all that I'll do for the Jewish people. He was so stubborn against the Romans till the end. Only yes, such a low Rabbi Akiva could be such a great Rabbi Akiva. Only a low Esav could be such a great Esav. We just get him on the right side. So he knew that Esav right now is labeled Rasha. No question about it. Now, one thing you got to know when you're dealing with kids who appear to be Rishon, you got to still always try to boost up their confidence. And one of the Hasidic masters is a beautiful pshat. It said, and Yitzchak loved Esav because there was deer meat in his mouth. Right? Kitzayid befiv, because there was venison in his mouth. Others learn, Rashi learns, tzayid befiv, Esav was trapping, also means trapping, Esav trapped Yitzchak, he fooled him with the venison. But the deeper pshat is, Yitzchak allowed Esav to think he was fooling him. You know, let's say, you have a yeshiva. Yeshiva's got a lot of rules. And let's say the guy had to be in class at 5:00. Okay, And he asked the boy, why come you weren't in class yesterday at 5:00? He said, well, I had a doctor's appointment at Kupat Cholim. And the Rebbe says, fine. Now the Rebbe knows Kupat Cholim closes at 4. He knows the kid lied straight to his face. But he knows now's not the time to confront this kid. And I'll let it go. Because the kid's still afraid to tell me the truth. That means he still is a little bit afraid. He still respects me a little bit. Because he could say, I hate your school. I'm not going to your school. I don't think you're anybody important. And I just didn't want to go to class. But the kid showed a little bit of respect. At least he just lied. So the Rebbe will play along with the lie. And all the kids go, the Rebbe's so stupid. He let you get off by that. Isn't he stupid? Doesn't he know the place closes at 4? How come he didn't tell you? The answer is the Rebbe knows everything. But he knows also when to play the very judicial, deaf, dumb, and blind teacher. You don't have to let them know how bad you really are, that they know you're so bad. It's okay, fine. And then you pick another time later on to talk about it. Say, a few weeks later, by the way, doesn't Kupat Cholim close at 4? And then try to explain to him. You have to know. You can't tell the kid who's a Russia, you're a Russia! Because then he's got no hope. You can imagine the strength. How much strength Yitzchak needed, Gvura, to not let Esav have it? You have a kid who's rotten. That's the way God made him. God gave him these Yitzharas. What do you want? That's his challenge in life. And he's failing in those challenges. Now, of course, it's a lot easier to say, you're a nothing, you're good for nothing. Look at this, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that. You know what self-control it takes to just take it easy. And Yitzchak was the one dealing with him. He understood. He let go. And he loved him because the deer meat was in his mouth. Who was hunting who? Esav thought he was hunting Yitzchak. Esav thought he was fooling Yitzchak. Yitzchak was fooling Esav. He was making say, yes, you're one. You are a good boy. Oh, yes, whenever you bring me food. Remember, whenever he went to his father, he put on nice clothes. He honored him very much. In the house, he honored him a lot. I'll say it was a rotten creep. Yitzchak knew all that. But he says, what am I going to say? He's going to bring me a meal and say, get out of here! You're a bum! You think I don't know what's going on over there? That'll be the end of Esav for sure. You're so nice. You're such a tzaddik. Here, come. Let's have the meal. Thank you very much. And it's kosher. This is a kosher one. Yeah, that's absolutely good. That's all. And that, because you don't have a choice. It takes so much control because he was hoping love will win it out. Eventually, it'll work out. But it still wasn't working out. It's not working out. But he didn't give up hope on him. He said, okay, I'm going to die soon. There is still this dynamic of two leaders. Yaakov's okay here. Esav is really in trouble. Now, I'm going to die, and I have to give a blessing. The man of control and decision and judgment is going to say, okay, who really needs the blessing, and who doesn't need the blessing? Yaakov is a tzaddik. He's on course. He's doing everything great. He is accomplishing on his own. Now, what's better, to accomplish on your own or to get a little assistance?
Accomplish on your own.
Get it on your own. If you don't need help, why should I give you help? If I give you help, it diminishes your quality. If you, let's say, you have two kids. One kid's a genius, one kid's not so smart, right? The genius. So the kid's not so smart, you know, you're gonna help him out. You're gonna give him the questions of the exam in advance. You wanna help him out. So he'll can pass. But the genius, are you gonna do him a kindness by giving him the test beforehand? No, let him get it on his own. He'll get 100 on his own. Let him work harder. He'll get it. It's better for him not to get any help. And that, he was right. And Yaakov does not need any blessings. He will be a tzaddik. He doesn't need any blessings. Esav, boy, is he going to need blessings. Now, how does a blessing work exactly? It doesn't mean Hashem all of a sudden makes Esav a tzaddik. But the blessing means we can create the environment around you to be more favorable. That things can work out a little better. You know, sometimes, you know, you can lose your parnasa, you can lose this, and you could be sick, and you can be that. That's in externals that make it a lot harder to succeed. And he wanted to give him blessings that life shouldn't be so hard on him. Maybe a few less temptations. So that he'll finally be able to overcome his challenges. And that was the blessing he wanted to give Esav. And if the blessing would work, still Esav and Yaakov could be partners one day. But not for 1 minute was Yitzchak a fool to not know what kind of child he had. Because he knew he was blind because of his kid. He suffered a lot from him. And he still didn't give up on him. He still had self-control to be a parent, to not patch his kid, to not hurt his kid, to try to build up his self-esteem. And he said, and he's going to get my bracha. Because I hope that, Hashem, I need your help to help me here. That the superficial environment around will make it conducive for him to be a little bit better. And that he can come around. And one day, he can be as great as everybody else. That was his thoughts. Okay. Now, and they were confirmed. Because when he walked in, when Yaakov walked in, and he smelt his clothes, it says he smelt the betrayers. I didn't tell you the end of the Medrash. Both cases of the betrayers, they were terrible, but they both did tshuva at the end of their lives, and they sanctified God's name. The one who took the menorah out of the Beis HaMikdash, and the king said to him, you know, that's a little bit too much for you, Mac. Go on a second time and take something else instead. This goes to me. And then he said, no. Then he realized, I was wrong. I'm not going to go in. He says, what do you mean? You better go in. I'm telling you to go in. I'm not going to go in. If you don't go in, I'm going to kill you. Then you'll have to kill me. He did tshuva. And the others don't have time. But the betrayers were betrayers who eventually did tshuva. So he thought he was seeing the future of Esav. He says, see, there is going to be tshuva from Esav eventually one day. But he was making a mistake. It was Yaakov, huh? But he didn't realize. And Yaakov too, you know, no matter how good he is, Yaakov can do an aver once in a while too, and he'll be able to do tshuva. He was misreading what was being known. Oh, so that's what Yaakov, Esav plans. Now, so where does the Zohar fit in? So Rav Dessler explains the Zohar like this. Look carefully at the Zohar. The Zohar didn't say that Yitzchak didn't know anything.
Yeah.
How is it that Yitzchak knew not all of Esav's evil deeds? And here's the little point of difference.
Oh.
Yitzchak knew that Esav was a Rasha. Absolutely Rasha. How much percent Rasha? 99% Rasha. But he knows that every Jew's got up as a little pintle, a little spark. And we've heard so many stories of the secular Jews. Something got that little spark and they become complete Jews. Rabbi Akiva, he was such a Rasha. He just sees the water dropping on the rock. If the water could do this to a rock, imagine it took it from me. Boom, that little spark, boom! The whole thing. And he so prayed to God that one day Esau's little spark will open up. But what did God not tell him? That Esau didn't even have the one little spark. That's what he didn't know. He didn't know all of Esau's wickedness. He knew 99.9% of Esau's wickedness. But he still held out hope. But Ep is still 40, still Ep is a Yiddish, Ep is a small little point in him. And that is what he was blind to. Now, his wife was more clever. You know why? Because she was in a house of crooks. She was raised in the house of Beis Lavan, the White House, full of crooks. She says it's full of crooks. She lived with crooks. She knew a crook. She can smell a crook a mile away. She knew Esav after time. She says, you know what? This Esav doesn't even have a drop of nothing. So what did Hashem hold back from him? That one little drop is what he held back. Yitzhak knew he's a Russia, 99% Russia. But he has to have this one little bit. He has to have, he's my son, something. And if we keep working on eventually, one day Hashem, I'm asking you, please create situation. Let him see, like Rabbi Akiva saw, the water falling on the rock and making a hole. Let him see that once. You know, that will inspire him. That's what I'm praying for you to give him. Give him a chance for inspiration. But Rivka knows, no, you're wrong. It's nothing. He has nothing. And that's what this was. Hashem held that back from him. That's what he held back from him. Why? Why? It's so late, I'm sorry. I'm just give me another 5 minutes. Why? So that, what does the Zohar say? But it did not realize that these were so that Yaakov should be blessed without his knowledge, but only by the will of the Holy One blessed is he. I'm making this very quick. What Hashem, and that's why Rivka couldn't tell Yitzchak. Because the one thing about a Gvura personality, you can never tell them that they're wrong. The Gvura Pesel, he makes decisions. I thought it through. I know what I'm talking about. So as much as Rivka would want to tell him, there's no way he can tell him, but how you got to tell him, you got to let him figure it out on his own. So what happens? Oh, so now, when it says the angels cried and he became blind?
Yeah.
That's not what it means. It means they cried because he was so holy. A person who's willing to give up his life for Hashem, he's a perfect son. Now, a perfect tzaddik is really good, but has one liability. You know what the one liability is? A person who's such a tzaddik cannot believe that somebody else could be such a Russia that they don't even have one drop of good in them. That's what Rashi is saying. Rashi is saying, on the one hand, he's blind because the wives of Esav were Rishoyim. And he knew he was a Russia. And he's still blessing him. You know why? Because he's the one who needs the blessing. He's the one who, I'm blind and I know how bad my son is. And I don't hold it against him. I think with a blessing it could work. But why can you give someone such a terrible guy? You know why? Because that's the second shot of Rashi. The angels cried and made him blind. Meaning he was blind. He could never believe that another person could be 100% wicked. And that's why he still wanted to bless. If he knew, like Rivka, that he was 100% wicked, he wouldn't have given him the blessing. So that's the two shot. And then finally, the third simple shot is so that Yaakov could take it. So that's what's going. That's what Hashem is playing out over here. So then what was the main point? The main point is everybody's got to have their big test in life. And Yitzchak did have a big test in life. And what's the big test? He decided that Esav deserves to get the blessing. He invested a whole life. He invested 63 years in this boy to make him into a mensch. And he figured, even if he's not, he still will be a mensch one day. I will give him the blessings from Hashem. Hashem will help. He'll get these blessings because he knows without Hashem's help, you can't beat the Yetzer. But with Hashem's help, he will. And he will make it. He is a good boy. Because look, he does give me food. He does do some good things. You can't tell me he's such a Russia. But he was so blind, even that good thing is all part of being a Russia. That he didn't know. So he made an error in judgment that anyone in his shoes would have made that error. Now comes the test. The test is, Hashem for one moment is going to show you, for one passing moment, that you made a mistake for 63 years. Are you able to say you were wrong? Just like Avram, for a whole life, said kindness, kindness, kindness. Hashem said, go kill your son. I want to say, can you kill your son? Can you go against everything you've been doing your whole life? Avram passed. Yitzchak has to pass his test. His test is very simple. You believed with your power of word that you have a son that no matter how bad he is, you think he's going to make it. You think your son's going to make it. You think he deserves a blessing. Notwithstanding everything else, but you still feel and you're trying and you believe and I can give you prophecies and I can do many things that make you think you're still right. But then all of a sudden, when who he thought was Esav, who he blessed, and he thought he blessed Esav, walks out. And then all of a sudden, Esav walks in. For that one moment, he realizes, whoa, what just happened? How is it possible that Hashem would make it that I should get tricked and give Yaakov the blessing? And at that moment, he has one of two choices to say, you know what? I was tricked. He doesn't get the blessing. Get out of here. You're a bum. Now, Esav, I'm going to give you the blessing. Or he could say, you know, if Hashem did all this, and it got past me, obviously Hashem thinks differently than me. And I, it's a project I worked on 63 years. I have to say, I was wrong.
So his test was the decision as to who to bless. It was
and he blessed, so that source said he wanted him to bless. So why would a blessing be such a good blessing when you reach the epitome of who and what you are? So when he actually gave the blessing to Yaakov, that wasn't everything. When he found out retroactively he was wrong and he still agreed to it, then that blessing was a valuable blessing. Because a real blesser is only one who can totally nullify himself before God. To have the power to bless means you nullify yourself before God. How do you nullify yourself? Well, you know, like a faucet. A faucet's like a blesser. It opens up, but that's only if it's not clogged up from before. If you don't submit to God, it's a clogged up blessing. How are we going to know that Yitzchak's worthy to give a blessing? He has to pass a big test. And what's the big test? Hashem said, you're wrong. And you have to admit that you were wrong. And that's what the Zohar is saying. It's beautiful what the Zohar is saying now. He's saying that it's still Yaakov should be blessed without his knowledge. Just to make to show that he was wrong. But only by the will of the Holy One bless me. It's only Hashem's will. If Hashem's will against my will, I submit to Hashem. And you know, people who are poor people find it very difficult to give in to God even. The chesed guy will always give in to God. God says, yeah, fine, whatever you say, I'll listen to you. The poor guy says, what do you mean? I'm my own man. I know what I'm doing. I made these decisions. I'm the boss. I make decisions. And God, you're wrong sometimes too. People in places of power fail in that. And that was the test for Avraham. To realize that was the Yitzhak. That I was wrong. So what do you learn from this? You learn a lot of things. But what else you could say? Wait a minute. So what do you learn? It comes out Yitzhak was wrong. So I guess we shouldn't treat our wicked children this way. No! It was only wrong with an ace of it's wrong. Who doesn't have one drop of good? But every Jewish child that we have today is not a descendant of Esav. It's a descendant of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And no matter how bad our children are, the worse that they are, they still have that drop. And we learn from Yitzchak, that's exactly how you raise your wicked children, because they're not an Esav. The only reason he was wrong is because he was an Esav that didn't have one drop of good. But any Jewish child today is incredibly better than Esav. No matter how wicked, he can do worse things than Esav. But he still has that spark of being a Jew. Then you see everything Esav did is way we should behave to our children that way. And then you have to see the greatness of Esav, of the person with that personality to admit that you're wrong. Okay, now what Yaakov had to do, that's a whole other story, another class for another time. But I think we addressed most of the issues here. What do you see? Hashem can lead you a whole life setting you up for one critical moment in your whole life. And that one moment, either you're going to make it or break it. And you have to have the honesty to make it. And that's why Yitzchak is a patriarch. That's what makes him a patriarch, and we have that ability too. And also to say like this, and the fact that Esav fails doesn't mean that everybody else has to fail. But I don't have time, we have to get further. I'm way behind. Yeah, sure.
Why did Yitzchak give Esav that blessing?
Oh, good. Why did he give Esav blessing? Because now he's saying like this. So Yaakov now had to get his blessings, but Yaakov only deserves the blessings if he lives up to it. If Yaakov, you're allowed to take it from Esav. You know why? Because Esav's a cheater. So you're allowed to cheat him back. But that only works if you use those blessings the way Hashem wants you to use it. So what becomes the blessing for Esav? Now that Yaakov is the primary Jew and all of Judaism comes from Yaakov, Esav says, well, do I have anything in life? Well, now you do. Now that I see you're really not going to be Jewish, so you could be the anti-Semite. And the anti-Semite will be the vehicle to keep the Jew on track. To keep the Jew on track. Because Yaakov does not deserve the blessing. He doesn't live like a good Jew.
But one second.
And that becomes his role.
Rabbi,
but I don't have enough time to explain
it.
It doesn't end.
Can you imagine if
forever.
He didn't raise him like that? What he
could have been
himself?
Even worse.